Hey, harlots. I'm Jen.
I'm Liz.
And we're Harmless Harlots.
Relationship geeks.
Ethical sluts.
We love exploring how to have more authentic relationships.
Whether it's with yourself, someone else, multiple others, or even the Earth.
We are enthusiasts, not experts. So if you'd like to explore along with us, we give you our enthusiastic consent to come along.
Well, I guess, I mean, I know I've seen you a little bit, but are there any major life updates since the 24th?
Major life updates. You think you know people. You do. You think you know them, and then you just don't. It's very jarring.
Okay.
Yeah, you just. Yeah, I have not had many people in my life just like overtly lie to me. Like I've definitely had people who were like being manipulative and kind of shitty, but not like overtly just lies. And so when it does happen, it's a jarring.
Okay.
So when you I value honesty and direct communication, and I feel like the people I've selected to keep in my life are people who are just kind of naturally good at that. And, you know, in COVID, those were my only people because you don't have many people when you're in a panorama. So I just got used to, you know, assuming everybody is just honest all the time and communicates directly. And that is not the case. When you meet new people, sometimes they're not honest and they don't communicate directly. And it's jarring. So that's what we'll say about that.
I'll just say anything else you needed to get off your chest.
No, those were the big things, I think. One thing, well, there was one thing I kind of want to talk about. One thing I've been kind of wrestling with is how to phrase this, like hypocritical boundaries somebody has what they don't want you to have, or vice versa. So for example, Josh and I have been together for a while, maybe not even boundaries, just expectation differences too, but Josh and I have been together for a while and it's been going wonderfully. And Josh's ex, she seems super sweet, and he's been saying, you know, it'd be really cool if I could meet her and, you know, we'd be friends and stuff. And I'm like, yeah, absolutely. Like that's my jam. I would absolutely love to meet your ex and be friends. It hasn't happened yet, but we've been trying to coordinate it. But the other day I, was talking about him potentially meeting, my ex Zach, and he was like, oh no, I don't want to meet your exes. And I was like, what? Like you really wanted me to meet your exes though? And he was like, yeah, but I don't want to meet yours. And I was like, but isn't that a little hypocritical? And he was like, no. I was like, no, it's different, like it's different with guys and yada yada. And I was like, I don't understand. I feel like it's a little hypocritical. But I was thinking about it and I was like, I mean, it is a little hypocritical, but I think it's a fine boundary to set. Like if he wants me to be friends with his exes but he doesn't want to be friends with mine, like that's okay, right? I don't know, it feels weird, but I can't put my finger on like whether it's like actually a thing I should be like, that's not fair, or if it's like, no, that's an okay rule for you to set. Like, cause I want to be friends with his ex. She seems really cool, but he doesn't want to be friends with mine. And I, you know, don't control who he's friends with. So if he doesn't want to, that's okay. But it does just seem kind of odd. Yeah. The other thing we've been talking about that's been a little hypocritical is he really wants to have biological kids, and I am on the fence about whether I want that at any point in my life. And we were talking about that, and I was saying how, like, you know, for women, biological, like having a biological child is a lot bigger commitment, because like it's a bigger toll on your health. Like it's you know, your body, you could die. Like it's a bigger thing. So like you understand why, like, you know, I might be more hesitant. He's like, oh yeah, that makes sense. If I was a woman, I don't think I would want biological kids. And I was like, wait, what? And he was like, yeah, like if I was a woman and had all the health doors, I wouldn't want a biological kid. But like as a man, I do. And I was like, I don't think that's fair then to ask a woman to bear your biological child if you know that in her shoes you wouldn't do the same.
Well, but I mean, like, it's not like he's forcing them. He's just
right.
Like, he's saying, if, you know, if it were riskier, I would not want it, but because it isn't, you know, he's not going to force his partner, but he's like, if I find a partner who also agrees to that, who is willing to take the risks, then I would want that.
Right. So, I mean, so that's, and that's why I'm wrestling, because like all of my gut is like, these are such hypocritical things. Like, I hate it. But then when I think about it rationally, I'm like, no, I mean, it's fair. Like having different wants for yourself than you have for other people is fair. Like it's fine, but it just, I don't know. My gut is just like, it feels hypocritical and I don't like it.
No. Yeah. I mean, so for the pregnancy thing, I mean, it's like, if it were free to go to Thailand right now, I mean, maybe traveling isn't the best thing during COVID, but like, say we're not in COVID, will we ever be again? I don't know. But so in this hypothetical world that doesn't have COVID, they're like, would you like a free, all planned expense paid for trip to Thailand? I'd be like, fuck yeah. But if somebody was like, would you like to pay $3,000, do all the work in planning it, and then take a trip to Thailand, I'd be like, I don't know. But if I had a friend who was like, hey, you know, do you want to pay, you know, I'm really good at planning trips and I got us a really cheap trip and I did all the planning and, you know, did all that, would you like to go to Thailand with me? I'd be like, yeah. So I mean, like, I don't know.
Yeah, no, I know. You're right. You're right. I mean, you're right. Like, I do think after having thought about it for a while, like, I think I agree, and I don't think there's anything wrong with Josh's, you know, philosophies and stuff. I don't know. It just feels weird to me, but.
Yeah.
No, but I think you're right. And I think he's not ethically or morally in the wrong in any way. I think you're right. And like, if he finds a woman who also wants like, he's not pressuring me to have his biological kids. I think he wants me to, but he's not going to pressure me to. And so I mean, if he finds a woman who also wants biological kids, like, you know, it's fine. I don't know. It feels odd.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's kind of like, as somebody who is very risk averse, there are a lot of things I wouldn't do, but if, you know, I'm not going to stop anybody else from doing them, like, barring if they're like, under the influence, that gets into paternalism, but I mean, like, I get why it feels weird, but at the same time, it's like, you know, just because I wouldn't go skydiving doesn't mean I'm gonna stop anybody who does want to go skydiving, you know, like, good for them.
Yeah,
I mean, these analogies aren't perfect because I'm talking more about, well, I guess that one's like risk, but you know.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think you're right, and I think he is ethically fine. I just am currently wrestling with some weird feelings about it. But yeah, I do think he's ethically fine.
And then as for the first one, I mean, when you were talking about hypocritical boundaries, that made me wonder if they were actually rules, because I had seen this one thing similar to what you're talking about, where it was like, I'm with this partner and they're poly and they have other partners, but they told me that they want me to be monogamous with them because it would just crush them if they, you know, if I had another partner besides them. And the people in the comments were like, yeah, no, that's a rule and that's weird and shitty. And so like, but you know, I mean, what he's doing is like his actions, like I guess, you know, if he's not forcing you to meet someone, but allowing you to meet them, and then he just is refusing to meet someone else.
Yeah.
So, I mean, those are, like, that is within his boundaries. I guess I'm just confused. Like, why does he want you to meet his ex?
They're still really good friends, and he attributes a lot of his emotional development and communication skills to her. She's a social worker, and he said that he learned a lot from being with her about like how to communicate effectively and express your emotions and stuff. And I'm big on those things. So he thinks we would get along and be pals, and I don't know. He really wanted me to meet her, and I also think she sounds great and that we would get along, so I also do want to meet her. He's not forcing me to meet her. He just was like,
yeah, 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 yeah.
but he wants me to meet her, and I also want to meet her, so that's cool. It just surprised me when I was like, do you also want to meet my exes? That he was like, no. And I was like, that seems odd if you want me to meet yours, but you don't want to meet mine. But
he said it was a guy thing?
He said guys are weird, is what he said. He was like, guys are weird, like it's different with men. And I was like, I asked him, I was like, is your concern that like he's gonna get territorial because like you're sleeping with me? Because like that's not who Zach is at all. Like that's not, it's not, he's not gonna be weird about you and I having sex. Like I have had sex with many of Zach's friends and he's aware of this and it's fine. But I don't know. I think we actually did work it out and they are going to meet tomorrow because I'm going thrift shopping with Zach tomorrow, which is another one of our favorite activities to do together. And I told Josh, I was like, tomorrow I am thrift shopping with Zach. You can come and see me and meet Zach, or you cannot see me. And those are your options. And he was like, well, I really want to see you. And I was like, well, you can see me and meet Zach, or you cannot see me. And he was like, okay, I guess I'll come. So they might end up meeting tomorrow. We'll see.
Yeah, I mean, I guess as not a man, I don't know how to dissect that argument.
Yeah, I know.
But I mean, I don't know. I think it is a discussion in like the poly communities of like, there are people who, I mean, like there's like kitchen table polyamory, which I guess is less with exes and more with like your current partners of like wanting everybody to know each other and get along. Yeah. But then there's people who are like, don't ask, don't tell, where it's like, you can have other partners. I'm just really not interested in like meeting them or knowing about them. Yeah. And I guess I don't know, like, I think I lean much more towards, you know, kitchen table, but I mean, yeah, that's philosophically, I don't have experience.
Lean far more toward, I don't like, I think it's don't ask, don't tell. Is, I don't want to say it's wrong because I know we're always too judgy on this show, but
I think one of us might be too judgy on this show.
I just, it's not for me. It's definitely not for me. Like it may work for other people and that's okay, but I need to be in situations where everybody knows everything. Everything's on the table. Like we're not hiding. We're not keeping secrets. We're not like, I need open, honest, forward, direct communication. Like that's just what I need for me. And if that's not what other people need, fine. I don't understand that. I don't think people function optimally when there are a lot of secrets flying around. I think if you watch any movie or television show, that's typically the moral, is that like, well, we tried to not give everyone the information and it fucked us.
Well, it's not necessarily like it's not lying in secrecy. It's just like, you know, I don't tell you everything right about my life. Yes. Just because like, some things aren't pertinent to you. Like, I don't discuss, yeah, with mom, you know, avatar culture, because, like, she doesn't get it. So it's, like, I think it's, you know, slightly different of, like it's a consensual agreement of we are not asking, not telling.
Yeah, I guess. But for me personally, to be comfortable in a relationship, I feel like I need to be able to feel like I can tell somebody anything. Like, I don't want to, you know, like, because if there are, yeah, pieces of me that they're like, I don't want to know about that, that's okay, but I'm not entirely comfortable in those relationships. Like, I want to feel, yeah, like I can tell you anything I want to tell you, even if it's anime culture and you don't get it, and you're still, you know, interested, or at least fine with knowing it. Like, if you're like, I don't want to know certain parts of you, I don't feel like you can love me fully, because if there are parts of me that you don't want to know about, I don't feel like I can be fully known and loved and appreciated. So I respect, yeah, if that works for other people, but it wouldn't work for me.
Yeah, I think, I don't know, I'll make a note and maybe I'll do some Googling about it later, but I guess I just don't know how much of it is just like preference, and if you find somebody with compatible preferences, great, or how much of it might be built into insecurity. Mm-hmm. I feel like the community is, and maybe that's just because it's my preferences, I feel like the community does lean towards more like kitchen table, but at the same time, I think that's kind of an ideal, and in reality, as I have experienced, sometimes your partners just don't vibe, and that's okay. Two people in your life who you love separately and individually, and maybe they're just too similar to really enjoy each other's company. And you know what? you know, that's what I have right now.
That sucks, though. But it sucks, though. Doesn't it? Doesn't it suck?
It hasn't posed much imposition on my life simply due to logistics and location and geographics. I mean, ideally, would I like that?
But it does not suck.
Well, I mean, I don't know. It hasn't been a major deal, but the two people in question are very stubborn, so... So yes, I guess I don't know what is the reasoning behind don't ask, don't tell reasons.
Well, I think there can be different reasons, and some may be more or less valid than others, and some may work perfectly well for other people. It's just, I know for me personally, would not work. Like, I need to feel that I can be fully authentic. And I mean, you're right, I'm not going to tell everybody and everything because I don't have infinite amounts of time, but like, I need to feel like I can. Like, I need to feel like there's no off-limit topics. Like, I could tell anybody anything if I wanted to.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess what I just want to look more into is like, is that just preferences or is it based in insecurities, which is something I don't know. But similar to what we have been talking about, which is something I've been wanting to rant about. And I'm going to try not to get into monogophobic territory because that's not where I want to go. But it will sound like that a little bit.
The more we do this, the harder it is to not be monogophobic. And I'm trying to be better because I do have a lot of, I mean, almost all of my friends are monogamous. Yeah. So I am trying to be better because I've made offhanded comments to them about how stupid monogamy is. And they're like, well, I mean, but for me, and I'm like, ah, fuck, I'm sorry. Like, I do love you and your choices are valid. But I just, the more we talk about polyamory, the more I'm like, why? Why would anyone not?
Yeah. So, but anyway, okay, so these are slightly underbaked thoughts. So we will discuss them and see where we get. But so, okay. So this is multiple thoughts. As I said, this is very unorganized as it stands. So one thought, which I think I may have said before, but I have an idea of how we could abandon the term monogamy at least and just make it a scale of polysaturation and be like, I have a polysaturation of one.
Hey, there you go. Instead of saying monogamous. I'm saturated at one partner. I'm saturated at two partners. Yeah, I like that.
then it would also have to be like, I am my poly saturation, my poly romantic saturation is like 3. My poly sexual saturation is like 4. And you just have a stats sheet. So that was one thing. But my second thing is the main thing I want to work through. So the initial thought that we're starting with is I don't understand. Okay, so if someone identifies as monogamous, that means that they want that their polysaturation romantically and sexually is one. They are satisfied with one person, and like, I don't even know how to say that. Like, the monogamy is just confusing me so much. It's like, what does that even mean? Like, you just don't want multiple people because you don't want the logistics of it. Like, I don't even get it anymore. I'm so off the deep end. I can't function in normal society anymore.
I do think a lot of it is rooted in attachment things. Because I was talking to one of my best friends about being monogamous because I think I have accidentally offended her a lot recently, which is my bad. I need to be less sometimes. But anyway, she was talking, kind of defending monogamy to me, and she was saying, I really like that my partner is not allowed to kiss anybody else but me. And I was like, why? And she was like, because he's only allowed to be with me, and I like that. And I was like, yeah, but why do you like that? And when we broke it down a little while, it was because, like, insecurity, and she was like, he can't be with anybody with me, and that means, and I was like, that's not healthy, though!
Yes. So you're getting to where I'm getting at. So say there is a couple, a relationship involving two individuals, and one person identifies as monogamous, and the other person does not. So here's what I'm trying to get at. When you think about it monogamy as it stands and as it is currently practiced is not a boundary, but
it's a
rule.
Yeah.
Because, like, you can, so here's what I'm trying to distinguish. It's like, if you say you're monogamous and that means that you just want one person, fine, great. Maybe you're introverted and you just need contact with one person every 2 years. Fantastic. However, if your definition of monogamy is rules based on what the other person can and cannot do, I don't think that's valid anymore.
Yep. So, well, like, unless you both agree. I don't know.
Yes, but here's the thing. If that's how you both identify, then, like, there shouldn't have to be an agreement, because that should just be how you both are. And anything is, like, it's like the other person's free will. So it's like, you really shouldn't have say over that. I don't know. I'm trying to work through this because, like, it sounds real radical in my mind, and I'm trying to reconcile it with not sounding so radical. But it's just like, monogamy is a rule. Monogamy as a boundary for you is fine. I only want to interact with one person. Monogamy as a rule, I just can't make it sound not toxic. I don't know.
Yep. This is my problem, is we've gone too far and I can't justify any of my friends' monogamy, and they all get upset with me, and I'm like, I'm sorry, I just don't, your choices, I don't understand them. I don't. Ah.
So I think
here's the instance where I think monogamy does make sense, where it's not a rule and it truly is just a shared similar boundary. So, like, if I have a boundary where I only want one person and my partner has a boundary where they only want one person, cool. We both only want one person. Yeah. We're happy. Monogamy, it works. But it's, and in that context, it's not a rule. It's that we both have this boundary that we like. Yeah.
No, that's what I'm saying. If two people who have polysaturation levels of one come together and they're just fucking content with each other, then fucking tastic. But when someone is looking for a partner, their level of saturation should not really even be a consideration, because that's none of their fucking business. Like, if that makes sense, like that's their, like, it's not things happening to you. It's things they are doing. Therefore, you don't really get a say, and it shouldn't really matter.
Yeah. That's the thing. Well, and that's the thing, is I think a lot of people are afraid if they let their partner have other partners, they will have less time and be less of a priority. And they will. But if you know what you need in a relationship, what you want from that person, you can set those expectations and still get that even if they have other partners. Like, if you're, so say you have a partner and you only want that partner to have you and nobody else. Your reasoning is probably that you want their, all of their attention to be focused on you. And that's cool, but also kind of selfish. Yeah. So if instead you think about, what do I need as a person? Well, I need to have, you know, at least 1 hour of quality time every day. I need a date night once a week. I need, you think about what you need and say to your partner, here are my needs. This is what I need. Can you do all of this for me while having other partners? And if they say no, they can't, then yeah. But if they're like, yeah, I could do all those things, but I could also, in my other spare time, because you're not asking for 24/7 from me, in my other spare time, I feel like I could maintain other relationships but still give you what you need, then cool, great. You do not get a say to be like, if someone can meet all your needs and still maintain other relationships in a healthy way, which is hard, it's not easy, but if they can do that, you should let them. You should not be like, no, I don't want you to be with other people just because.
Yes. I agree with those things. And that applies to a second conversation I want to have. However, here is maybe the most radical and possibly ethically dubious thing.
Oh boy.
So given that, I then don't feel like, Okay. Let me, this is a lot of elements. Let me say them all before you respond. So I don't feel like you then, given what everything we just said, I don't feel like you should feel obligated to put on your profile when you are dating, or, you know, lead with, I am poly, from an ethical standpoint, because that's none of their fucking business. If they ask, and you lie, obviously that's bad.
Right.
That's a lie.
Sure.
But if you refrain from answering, that's also, like, it's just none of their fucking business. And, like,
yeah.
So, like, ethically, it's, like, I now can see why, like, you know, if somebody's doing it for the reasons that we have just constructed, it's, like, yeah, I get that. However, I do understand the practical implications of, like, getting involved with someone, and then because of the immoderate normative culture we're living in, you know, getting involved with someone, and then, you know, they discover, or you tell them that you have other partners, and then they dump you, so that, you know, you're just wasting time, which is why putting poly first is, you know, like, a good way to approach people who are open to that. So it's, like, you know, a balance, because we don't live in this ideal culture, but we should live in this ideal culture.
Yeah, no, so I agree with you from a theoretical standpoint that you are not required to disclose that you are polyamorous when you meet somebody. For sure, yeah, you're not required. You're not required to disclose anything when you meet somebody. You don't have to tell anybody anything about yourself.
Yeah.
Because you don't have to do that. So, I mean, you're correct. From a theoretical standpoint, you do not have to put poly in your dating profile. However, from a practical standpoint, in the world we live in, I can tell you, I have had a much easier time dating after having poly on my profile. Because when I didn't have it on my profile, and everyone just assumes you're monogamous, because that's the world we live in, I would meet people who were very not open to polyamory, and it was a waste of time, because I would get there and we'd chat, and they'd, you know, and as soon as I would say, you know, like, once we started having the conversation of, do we want to, you know, make this exclusive? There's always the conversation of, are we going to be exclusive? And I would be like, well, actually, I don't really do exclusive, because that's
really
not a lifestyle.
That
they would get upset, and it was just bad. So from a practical standpoint, I have had a much easier time putting polyamory on my profile, having the conversation earlier on. I think for me, it's also been a good gauge to get open-minded people too. Because if somebody sees poly and they're like, no, then it's probably not somebody who you want to hang out with. But if somebody sees poly and they're like, oh yeah, like, I'm open to that, then it's generally a more open-minded
person. I just want to save the lost souls who don't understand and are trapped in these immoderate normative expectations, and then I want to date them and then be like, by the way, polyamory, and convert them, but I know that's bad.
That's not bad.
Not what I should do. When I'm dating, I should be dating for, like, connection and not to promote my agenda.
Jenny, not if that's not what you want. Maybe you're not looking for a connection. Maybe you're looking to.
I am looking to evangelize.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's
welcome
fine.
To the new church of polyamory. Population me and my sister.
Okay. We should write a book.
Yes. Okay. Well, anyway. Okay. Well, I'm glad we worked through that. Okay. But yes. So
your super radical idea was just that you don't think you should have to put polyamory in your dating profile.
No. The thing before that, which is that you don't have to disclose that you're polyamorous, because monogamy as a way of controlling other people is toxic. So what I'm saying is that the structure of monogamy that we have now, I just think, is toxic. People who identify as monogamy in the sense of they only want one partner is valid. Monogamy in the sense of I only want my partner to have one partner, toxic.
Yeah.
And none of your fucking business, and none of your right. That is the radical idea.
Okay. Well, that's... Yeah, I don't disagree. I don't think it's that radical, but I'm also very radical, so that's probably why I don't think it's that radical, because I also am like,
but,
yeah, there's no reason to.
Yes, so that is the summary of that idea. Second idea, which is something you said before, but so I've been thinking about, so like you said, like you were like, you should as a person be like, these are my needs, and you should talk to people and be like, can you meet any of them? And if they meet a sufficient amount, then it's like, cool, let's be partners. I don't care who else you, what other partners you have, because that's none of my fucking business, as we've discussed. but so then in a polyamorous context, and this is probably just me wanting to be too scientific and liking rules and structure where there really isn't any. But so then in that context, in this hypothetical utopia in my mind that we are living in, so say you like have needs, and there's like, you know, attention and sex and romance, whatever that is, connection, then I guess I've just been wondering how one decides to add someone to their polycule. Like, how do you decide that a partner is worth it if you're not monogamous? Because monogamy is like, these are my needs. I find the person who meets the most of them the best, and I stay with that one person. But when you're poly, it's more complicated of like, I have needs, this person meets some, but like, you could, so say you have, to put in a, quantify it, say you have 20 needs, so like, hypothetically, you could have 20 different partners who each meet one need, or you mm-hmm. could have two partners who each meet 10 needs. Mm-hmm. So, I guess it's like...
or one partner who meets 17 and one who meets 3.
Yeah, yeah. So, but then there's also the fact of, like, when you're in a relationship, you are also providing. So then maybe is each person just a cost-benefit analysis of, like, you know, these are things that you give me, and in exchange there are things, you know, like, in exchange sounds very transactional, but, like, if you break it down, like, and then for the relationship, there are hypothetically things that I give you and that you ask of me. So then it's just, like, you meet people, and, like, if they give you equal slash more in worth, because, like, I could give you a minute and you could give me 3 hours, and maybe that minute is worth more to you than, like, the 3 hours are worth to me. So, like, the exchange doesn't necessarily have to be equal, but, like, we're deep in a rabbit hole here. Just let me get through it.
as much as, do you want to keep going? Okay, you keep going.
Okay, just let me finish the thought, and then you could wreck it all down. So then is it just like is it just like you meet a person and, you know, you somehow figure out what they give you and what you give them, and then you decide if it's worth it? Because
all right, so here's where I'm going to come in like a wrecking ball, because as much as I'm a mathematician and logical about everything, you're going about everything far too logically. And logic is good, but it only goes so far. There is an element to love and connection that is somewhat intangible. And I don't have an explanation for it. I don't think there is one. I don't think there should be one. Because there are people I have met in my life that have made perfect sense to be together with, but there's just not that thing. There's not that just like spark. And it, you know, there are other people who it's made less sense for me to be with, who there was that spark, and it's annoying because you can't control the spark. So I do think in our society, they tend to encourage unhealthy choices and be like, if there's the spark, that's all that matters. Like, logic be damned. And like, no, that's unhealthy. Like, sometimes even if there's the spark, if you have incompatible needs, it's not going to work out. And sometimes the spark has to be damned. But on the flip side, sometimes there are people with whom it works out perfectly. And like, you know, maybe you do meet one person who meets all 20 of your needs, and you could meet all 20 of theirs. But if it doesn't bring you joy to do that, then don't do it. Like, you're wasting your time if it's not sparking joy. So there is something intangible. As much as I would love to quantify it and be like, here are my needs, here are your needs, what can we fulfill? Sometimes that works. There also has to be an element of connection and passion and excitement that has to be there. And if it's not, you need to reframe the relationship. You can be friends, you can be palsy-walsies, but every partner I have subsequently had after a partner has been better, because I've learned more about myself and what I need through each relationship. So from each partner, one of the things I have done is like written down, what did I learn from this? What do I need? And I've kind of added to this ongoing list of like, this is what I want and what I need and what brings me joy. And it's helped me choose better partners each time. So every partner I feel like has been like a step up from the last one, and we're slowly getting better at finding people who fit well into my life. Anybody who cannot stay friends with their exes is not somebody who's compatible with my kind of lifestyle. Like, that's a big red flag for me. Like, that is a big red flag that they are not capable of maintaining relationships when they are not like benefiting in some very specific way. And like, if, you know, if they're not getting one aspect, the whole thing's not worth it. Like, to me, it's a big signal they don't value friendships. One of my first date questions with people is, are you friends with your exes? And if they say no, as a principle, I don't, I'm like, okay, bye. Like, you're not, it's not gonna work for me. So I specifically only have dated people who have said like, yeah, like I can maintain friendships with my exes, like they're beautiful people, like we don't have sex anymore and there's no romantic, but like we are still friends. Because why would you throw someone away who connects with you on so many levels? That's dumb.
So I didn't read your outline last time until after we had recorded, and there are some very interesting notes here that I wish I had read before because I would have prompted you to talk about these things if I had.
There is one note that says I'm polyamsexual,
There
and
is.
I put a question mark because I don't even remember what that means. Sometimes I write notes to myself and then time passes, and by the time I come back, I'm just not quite sure what I meant.
I don't remember what I was talking about.
So, if I
The one that
had
popped
to
out to
guess,
me was you want to start an OnlyFans?
listen. Well, fun story. I got a follow request from a girl from my school who I know and I thought I was already friends with, and so I friended her, and then it was like her OnlyFans Instagram account or some other platform similar to that. So I was like, oh, interesting. Like, good for you making that bank. And I don't know, I just saw a couple other TikToks about it, and it just got me thinking. It's like, you know what? I feel like I could be pretty good at it. Like, I need money. I don't
Have had several men tell me I should do OnlyFans. They're like, you'd be really good at it. You could make a lot of money. Like, if you thought about it. And I'm like, you know, I have thought about it. I am in the position where I don't need money, fortunately.
know.
So for me, I don't know. Like I'm all for enjoying my body and enjoying my sexuality, and you know, having financial security. Those are all good things. I definitely like I have nothing against other people doing it. Like I think it's super cool when I find out, you know, my friends have it. I'm like, that's awesome. I will support you. Amazing. For me personally though, I am fragile. And well, I am very confident. I also am fragile, and I know when you put yourself out there on the internet, you're gonna get some people who are not going to be nice to you, and I don't know if I emotionally would handle that well. I have the utmost respect for people who can handle it well and people who do it, which is again why I have nothing against people doing it. Just me personally, I don't know how I would handle that sort of criticism, and I don't want to find out in case it's not well. So that's my thing, but
Interesting.
you are very confident. So definitely, if you want to do it, I would say.
I was gonna say, I feel like I'm at a space where it's like, I don't
Yeah. You also have
know.
a, how to phrase it, a more not like I could see you doing it as an activist kind of thing because you don't shave your armpits, you don't shave your legs, your body is more non-stereotypically female than mine. So from your perspective, it would be kind of cool. I had a dance teacher one time who was talking about how like when she sees performers get naked on stage, to her it's not radical if you have a very normative looking body because there's nothing brave about that. If your body looks very normal and you're showing it to people, it's like cool, not that radical. But, you know, she thought it was a lot braver when people who, you know, either had some sort of physical deformity or had done something more drastic with their bodies, that was more brave in her mind. So, like, for me, I have a very stereotypical female looking body. So there's, I don't know, like, I could make an OnlyFans and, like, yeah, I'm sure I would make some money and it'd be cool, but it wouldn't, like, help the world in any way, you know? I don't think the world needs
No,
more skinny
it would
women.
transfer money from men to women. That's a
That's
good thing.
true.
That's
That's
a good
true.
thing.
That's true. But I think it would be more powerful if you did it because I don't think the world needs more representation from people who look like me in pornography because there are a lot of women who look like me in pornography, but there aren't as many women who look like
Fair.
you. So I think it would be cool if you
Fair.
did it.
I feel because of that, I don't know what the market is for that, so my financial gain might not be as much from you.
Yeah, I don't
But
know.
yes, anyway, that was just a thought I had. It just seems like I know I don't know a lot about it. It just seems like a nice way to make cash.
Well, but didn't OnlyFans recently decide they're not going to do porn anymore? Like, you can't
I don't remember. And I feel like they said that and then they like reinstated it. I don't remember. Because like, if they don't do porn, why do they exist?
That's a great question. Excellent question. That's their whole thing. Actually, a girl we used to do theater with has an OnlyFans. She does OnlyFans. So if you're interested, you could probably message her and be like, I'm interested in doing this. What's your experience?
Okay. Wow. Yeah. No, I totally forgot about her. I couldn't have told you her name, but.
Yeah. That's why I love social media, because like there are so many people that I would not have stayed connected to. And I find these connections with through Instagram and Facebook and Twitter and all these things. So I know social media can be toxic and bad, but it can also be really nice and help you connect with people that you wouldn't have otherwise. Tell me about Godzilla.
It is a fan wrote into us, and here I will pull it up. Okay, so listener writes in, hey there, I've been a listener since episode 4. Just heard y'all are looking for something to say to sneezes that's non-religious and less German.
Oh, yeah.
Try saying Godzilla. A few people will actually hear what you say. Those who do will question it. Just dismissively tell them it's non-denominational. Then carry on with whatever conversation it was you had.
So, I do like that.
Thank you, listener. Godzilla. Godzilla's the new thing.
I do like that. That's funny. I do instinctively still, when people sneeze, I'm like, bless you. And then I'm like, that feels wrong to say. Like, I'm not religious. I'm not
curse
blessing you.
Like, it's just, damn you.
Fuck you and your sneeze. Be more healthy. Why don't you? Other things you have written down on your thing. Need to feel special. Jenny Bear, do you need to feel special? Do I need to make you feel more special? Am I not cherishing you enough? I love the meme that's like the Sweet Life of Zack and Cody thing, which like, how do you lose a woman? And Cody's like, you forget to cherish her.
No, this is actually because I am an avid Just Dancer. For those of you who don't know it, it started out as a Wii game, and it is now an app that you can play through the Chromecast by connecting it to your TV. Oh, Lizzie, did you see the TikTok I made?
No, you made a TikTok. Hold on, I'm gonna go watch your TikTok. Hold on, 1 second. One moment. Okay. I love that audio, first of all.
I do too.
It's applicable to so many things. That is funny.
TBH, I have watched my own TikTok many times and laughed.
This is my other thing about, I want to write a book on like healthy ways to use social media. Like, you should enjoy consuming your own content. Like, I love looking at my own Insta posts, listening to our podcast. Like, if you are not enjoying the shit you're making, you're doing it wrong. Like, make shit for you. And if other people like it, cool. But like, it's for you.
Well, I think it was Daniel Glover who, like, somebody asked him what music he listened to, and he's like, my music, I like it. Like, if I didn't like it, I wouldn't make it. And it's like, that's fair. And I was thinking, I do like to listen to podcasts, because I don't like to listen to music when I work out, because it's just too repetitive. So I need something more distracting. So my favorite podcast is called My Brother, My Brother and Me. Acronymized as Mabim Bam. Do you watch? Do you listen to that?
Yeah, you showed it to me years ago.
I showed it to you? Okay, yeah, that makes sense. anyway, it's a comedy podcast and I really like it. And they also have another podcast called The Adventure Zone, where it's the same people and they play D&D.
I've heard of that.
Yeah, it's not as good, but I don't know, it's fine. And I was like, this morning, you know, working out, and I like went to queue up a podcast and I was like, I don't know, I'm just not in today. And I was like looking at my other podcasts, and it's like, I'm just not feeling any of these. And it's like, I would listen to my podcast. Like, I already know what's going to happen, but I just need something that's my podcast, but not my podcast, which there are lots of podcasts that are similar to ours that talk about polyamory. But yes, I agree. Yeah. Make content for you.
I mean, I listen to our podcast every time because I have to pull quotes for you and, you know, do edits and things. But
I listen to it because I have to edit it. So I am intimately aware of every the content of every podcast.
But like, it's fun to go back in the history sometimes. Like, I was having a conversation with a friend the other day about the use of the L word, and she was like, "You should go back and listen to your episode about when you talked about like saying I love you." And I was like, "I should go back and listen to that episode and like take my own advice."
Anyway, we got off track.
Sorry.
Anyway, the TikTok that Lizzie watched, it uses the audio that says, "Who's that Pokemon? It's Pikachu. It's Clefairy. Fuck!" And so my wording over it is based on a true story, and it's, "Why isn't the Chromecast working?" And my theory is because it's a piece of shit. And then I discovered that I had plugged it into HDMI 3 instead of HDMI 2, and I was silly. So that is the TikTok. And yes, I made that TikTok because I played Just Dance with the Chromecast. Back getting to the origin of this. But anyway, I was playing Just Dance on the Chromecast. Then I got to work by plugging into HDMI 2. And I didn't play it all the time that I was living away from home because I don't have a Chromecast. So there were some new songs. And so I found this one song that was called Rare by Selena Gomez. That is apparently a new song from her new album or whatnot. And like the whole, here, let me look up the lyrics.
Yeah, rare. I've heard it before. It's like, "I want you to make me feel rare" or something.
Okay. "It feels like you don't care. Oh, why don't you recognize I'm so rare, always there. You don't do the same for me. That's not fair. I'll bet there's somebody else out there to tell me I'm rare, to make me feel rare." And so I was listening to that and I was like, interesting. And like, you know, this isn't an original concept, obviously, because I don't know, I do feel like something I've especially seen on like poly pages, it's like, you know, some people, this is just the one I remember, not this, this isn't necessarily all the time, but it's like people will say, "Oh, I don't want my partner to be poly because then I won't feel special." And it's like, I don't know, it just makes you think, why, what does it mean to feel special? Why do you need to feel special? Why do you need your partner to make you feel special? So, I don't know, I've been thinking about that.
I don't know, I like feeling special. I definitely like feeling valued and like I provide something that not everybody else could provide. Particularly at work, I found that in my job, I'm a lot happier when I feel like I'm doing something that like, I have a particular skill set that is useful and unlike other people. It's nice to feel special and valued and like it matters that you're here and it's not somebody else. Yeah. And I think a lot of when I've fallen in love with people has been because I think they're special and rare and like they have a unique combination of aspects that other people don't have. Also, the more you live in the adult world outside of college, which I realize you haven't done yet, but you're about to, the more you live amongst the uneducated, shitty, ignorant masses, the more you find that good people are very rare. It's hard to meet people who are smart and open-minded and intellectually curious and all those things. Which is not to say, I feel like I'm being a little classist here. It's not to say that if you didn't go to college, you're ignorant and awful because some people can't afford it. And I totally,
you're not a bad person. And some people who do go to college are still ignorant.
Correct. Yeah. Going to college does not blanket make you a good person. I shouldn't say anything that implies that because it's not what I believe. But in college, you are exposed to a higher proportion of people who are intellectually curious and, you know, more forward thinking, I feel like, at least with the colleges we went to. And when you're thrust out into the real world, where all of a sudden you're like, "Trump supporters, you guys are, you're real? You, oh, okay." yeah, people are shitty. So finding good, genuine, open-minded, curious, excellent people is, they are rare. That's what I'll say on that subject is I do like feeling special and rare, and I also feel that many of my loved ones are very special and rare, and I think that's nice.
I don't know, that's just never something, I guess I know I am much less experienced, but that's just never something that I've like felt a strong desire for, or like, and maybe this is bad because I imagine if my partner could complain. This could potentially be a complaint of something I'm bad at. But it's just like, I don't know. And maybe it's because like my whole personality is basically just like breaking social norms. So it's like, I know I'm pretty weird and like kind of out there. And I have been for a long time. Like I've probably told this story already, but like before freshman year of college, we went on a hiking trip. And at the end of it, we like sat in our little circle of 10 and we had to go around and like compliment, like give each person a compliment. And like everybody's for mine, I remember just being like, you're like really original and like you're very unique and like you're so yourself, Jen. And I was like, yeah.
Correct.
So maybe it's just
doesn't that make you feel special that you're like unique and original and authentic in yourself? Like, isn't it kind of nice to hear that like people notice who you are and they appreciate it?
I don't know. I feel like it's that was tied more to my want of breaking social norms than to like necessarily feeling special. Like if we lived in a world where everybody broke social norms, then I imagine that wouldn't be so much of my personality and I wouldn't particularly care. So I don't know. Maybe it's just a me thing. I just, because like, what is that even like special? Like irreplaceable?
Oh, no. Well, special and rare do not imply unique. They imply, you know, you're not the only one, but you are a rare, I'm trying to think of more synonyms, but there's many people like you.
But why do you want to be rare?
I feel like it makes you more valuable. You
why
know,
do
like
I
you're
want
not
to
maybe
be a commodity.
I don't know. Maybe it's capitalism that has convinced us we all need to have value and provide things for the economy. I don't know, but I don't know. I do remember.
I'm trying to think if it's like if what people really mean is like appreciated.
Yeah.
Because, like, you know, as you said, like, when you find somebody who is good, like that is, you know, good. And like, you know, the chances of that happening are fairly rare. And so it's like, you should feel appreciated, but it's like, I don't know if that's, and maybe that's just the word, what people mean when they say special. I don't know. I don't get it.
I don't know. I do remember there was one time when a friend of mine wanted to enter a romantic partnership with me, and I did not really want to be in a romantic partnership with them, and we were discussing how we were going to handle that really weird power dynamic. And one of the things I asked him was like, what do you want to get from me out of a romantic relationship? Like, what are you wanting? And he said he wanted to provide something for me that only he could provide. And I was like, well, what would that possibly be? Because like, it can't be sex. I can get out of other places. It can't be, you know, dates and stuff, because I can also get those other places. Like, what is it you want to provide that nobody else can? And he was like, I don't know, but if you don't see it, then I obviously can't do it. And I was like, well, that's probably the issue we're having here. But he also really wanted to feel like unique and special and stuff, and I was just like, I don't feel
are. That dialogue of like, I can do it and nobody else can, I feel like that could potentially be tied back to like insecurity and like I said, like irreplaceable, of like, you know, only I can do this, so they can never get rid of me.
Well, and it's not, I wouldn't say it's something I need to have, but it is something that's nice. You know, like if you're a person, you're like, I need to feel like I'm special, then like that's maybe unhealthy, but it is nice. Like, I don't think it's wrong to enjoy feeling special and unique and like you can contribute something that other people can't. I don't know. It's, feeling special is cool.
I suppose. I feel like it might be tied to capitalism, because it's like, if you are rare and you are valuable, then like, you know, when resources are scarce, you'll get some because you provide value.
Yeah, you're probably right. Well, and the desire to feel special and to be able to, you know, be unique and stuff is more for other people than it is for you, right? Like, it benefits other people that you can contribute things, not really. Like, being special doesn't really help you in any way. It helps the society. So it probably is a capitalist-driven thing to you should try and contribute something unique because that will help us.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Like, I don't want people to say, I don't know. Like, I feel like there is an aspect of, like, you know, appreciation. And so, like, I definitely feel that partners should express appreciation for their, you know, specific partners. Mm-hmm. I just, the wording of special and, like, rare, I don't know. That just doesn't sit right with me.
On a similar vein, I've never liked how people use the term or the word deserve in aspects of relationships of like, you deserve better or I deserve better or yada. Like, I've always thought that was a weird, like, who decides who deserves what? I don't know. It always struck a weird chord with me where I was like, who deserves what? Who decides that? I don't know.
I mean, I guess it depends on the specific situation and context, but I guess in the context I think of it being used in, it's usually like, you deserve to be treated with human decency and to have your needs met. So that's usually what I feel like people mean, which I agree with.
Yeah, well, yeah. And I mean, I guess in that context, you are deciding of, I don't know where deservedness is derived from. Like, who determines what is deserved? I guess you do in that context, you decide, but I don't know.
I mean, I think just as humanity, we've, like, the Geneva Convention of Basic Human Rights, like, I don't know, we just kind of came together, like, do we all agree this would be shitty? Yeah? Okay, write it down.
Cool, write it down.
I mean, I guess I can see your confusion being, you know, partners break up and one person is like, they didn't meet. Okay, so like, say, so two partners, one partner has a long list of things that they want out of a relationship. And so, say, one of those things is like, you know, the very stereotypical, like, bring me flowers every week. And like, the other partner does not, as we spoke to earlier, I don't remember, in or off podcast, of like, if the other person cannot enthusiastically meet that need, then they will probably leave the relationship. So then in that case, I can see how, like, you know, if that partner is crying on their friend's shoulder and the friend says, you know, it's all right, you deserve better, then I can see a conversation around, like, what is a realistic request from a partner. Is that kind of what you're getting at?
Maybe, kind of. I don't know. I don't really know if I was getting at anything other than you were like, I feel weird about the word special. And I was like, well, I feel weird about the word deserve. And that was kind of the extent of my thought.
Well, no, I mean, I can definitely see that, because it's like, because that's more of like a rule, right? Like, boundaries are walls around you. You can do whatever you want. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, the healthiness of some of those boundaries, I'm sure you can debate. But then for like rules or like, you know, wants/needs of like, I want my partner to give me flowers every week, you have to find somebody who's willing to enthusiastically consent to do that. And so it's like an issue of, does that person even exist/, I mean, there's even, you know, like, is it an ethical thing to ask of somebody, but saying it is, like, is it a reasonable thing? Like, what is the likelihood you're going to find that person? And, you know, where does this stem? Where does this need come from? Like, is it an insecurity? Is it a trauma? You know, who are we, and are we just our traumas? Like, I don't know. So, yeah.
Are we nothing but the collection of our lifelong traumas?
What is valid? What is a disease and illness?
So, yeah, who am I and what is my trauma?
I think, you know, beyond basic respect and human dignity, what do you deserve in a relationship?
Yeah.
Good question.
I don't know.
Food for thought.
All right, also on your list, how to comfort. Actually, how to comfort is a thing I have been sort of studying, because I am debating going into more of a people leadership role in my job instead of the more technical stuff I do now. So I've been listening to a lot of podcasts and TED Talks and things about how to be a good people leader. And one of the things they've talked about is, you know, providing emotional support and listening and stuff. And one of the pieces of advice that I thought was really good was when somebody is telling you something that's really important to them, either emotionally or for work or whatever, and your job is to listen, and you're not sure what exactly they want from you, you should like ask how you should be listening. Like, do you want me to listen just to listen? Like, are you just venting? Like, do you want me to sit and not say anything and just kind of take it in? Do you want me to try to fix the problem? Do you want me to not try to fix the problem and just kind of acknowledge your emotions? Like, what are you looking for out of this? Which is good, because I think you've talked about a lot of the time whenever you're listening to people's problems, you always jump into fix it mode, and sometimes people get upset and they're like, I don't want to fix it. So it's good to find out when people are talking, like, what are they hoping to get from you listening? Like, do they want you to fix it, or do they want you to just acknowledge their emotions with them? Like, what is the desired outcome of the listening?
Yeah. So this is like just a topic that I've been meaning to like research more as you have been doing. And it's, the problem I've run into is I'm kind of looking for very general guidelines, because maybe I'm projecting, but in my experience, if I or like my partner is upset, I really don't know what I want. I just know that I'm upset.
Yeah.
And I don't know what would make it better. But I think the thing is, like, I think because that is how I feel, I don't really expect, like, I don't know. I think maybe I do know what I want. Like, I think besides just like being there and like, you know, listening and and being engaged, like if they're present and like being empathetic, then like I don't really expect them to be able to solve my problem. Like, I'm just upset, I just want reassurance, maybe. But at the same time, like, I don't know, if they did solve my problem, I'm sure that'd be great. So it's like, for me, it's been, I don't really know what I want, and I've had experience with other people who don't really know what they want. We're just upset and we don't know what to do. Or even just like, I think this was sparked by, I read something talking, like criticizing people who say pleasantries, like, you know, after somebody dies, like, oh, they're in a better place, and how they were saying, like, they're just saying those things. And what they're really saying is, if I explain this away, then like, you know, it happened to you, but it won't happen to me. And it's like, I think most people just have no fucking clue what to say, and there's just a script and they follow it, because like, okay, you say all these pleasantries are bad, what the fuck are you supposed to say?
Well, so, I also think a lot of people are very uncomfortable with acknowledging both their own and other people's emotions. So when people get emotional, a lot of people's gut reaction is, how do I stop this? Like, how do I cease this emotion? Because I don't want to deal with this emotion. And I think we're kind of learning as a society, and we emotionally develop and stuff, that that's not the best thing, maybe, all the time. And it's instead better to acknowledge the emotion and kind of sit in the emotion for a little while and not just be like, stop feeling emotional, it's making me uncomfortable. Because I think that's where the whole, oh, they're in a better place thing comes from. It's like, oh, you're sad? Stop being sad. Let me try to make you not sad. Like, this is, I don't want emotions. It's better sometimes to not do that and be like, let's acknowledge that we're sad and that's okay.
Yeah, that actually reminds me. I forget what philosopher thing this was, but something from a philosopher that I read that was like, it was like Aristotle or Plato or a very ancient person. And they were talking about like art, and they were like, art is bad because, I'm going to represent this very poorly, but they were like, art is bad because it's all emotion, and emotion is, you know, you have two sides, your logical and your emotional side, and emotional side is bad. And the example they gave is, say there's a mother and their child dies, and you know, their emotional side wants them to be depressed and cry and lie around for 3 months, but that's not productive or logical. They should get back to work.
Capitalism yeah, does so, not encourage emotions.
Yeah, and so I think people who don't understand capitalism and like post-agriculturalism I think prior to that, like, even I would have been like, yeah, no, I mean, like, you're right. Like, they should just get up and get back to work. But, like, post all of that, it's like, well, maybe they are sad and want to cry for a lot of time because that's the natural response. And maybe society should support them in that instead of, you know, letting them flounder and struggle all by themselves. And there should, like, be support structures to support people who that happens to and, like, brings them food and gives them services while they're going through this grief period. So, yeah, fuck you, old philosophers, capitalists.
But, Jenny, if everybody isn't working and contributing all of the time, society will collapse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, it won't. Yeah. Literally, ugh, I have been slacking off a lot in my job. I'm really good at my job. Here's the thing. I'm really good at my job. I have to be careful because my boss ever sees this. I'm really good at my job and I do the job I was assigned to do, but I also don't work 8 hours a day. I just don't. And I don't need to, and nobody suffers for it. There's no reason we need me to work 8 hours a day. No reason at all. I think this is true of most people. There is no reason we need everybody working 8 hours a day. We really don't.
It's a scam.
It really is. There's no reason for it. Like,
there's no reason.
It's not healthy for your brain. It's not healthy for your emotional health. First of all, you can't. Like, you cannot make your brain focus 8 hours a day consistently, 5 days a week, and not just, like, die. But second of all, we don't need it. We really don't. Like, we have automated enough of society that we could all survive and live perfectly content lives with, like, I don't want to throw out a number because I don't know, but it wouldn't need to be everybody working. Like, everyone doesn't need to have jobs for society to get by. Like, we could have a lot of people lying around doing nothing and we would be okay. There is no reason we need.
We would be better than okay. We would be improved.
We would be improved if we could just accept that, like, we could let people be lazy and it would be fine. People are so terrified that if we let people who are lazy survive, then society will just collapse. And it's not true. Like, we could let a lot of people be lazy and we'd be okay, because there are always going to be people who want to contribute. Like, there are going to be people who want to do stuff, and then cool. Like, we'll, you know, and if there are jobs that nobody wants to do, we will have to incentivize them in some way, whether that be through money or big fancy houses or whatever. But, like, we'd be okay if everybody didn't work. We really, really would.
Yeah.
If we had a universal basic income, society would not collapse. We would just all survive and be happier.
Yeah. Yes, I agree.
How do we always end up ranting about capitalism? Because everything is rooted in capitalist evil.
Agriculture literally was the downfall of humanity. Like, we got agriculture and everything has been downhill since then.
We decided women were property. We stopped being nomadic. It was a whole bad deal for everybody.
Yeah. No. Agriculture has been the death of us all.
Privilege problems. You have privilege problems as a bullet point. Tell me about privilege problems.
I mean, I think we've talked about this before, but it's just like, I am in a relative state of privilege to the majority of human beings on this earth. And yet, you know, I'm living at home and I am incredibly lucky to have parents who are willing to house me as long as I want or need, because they are good parents and they are financially stable. And I know that's something that, like, not a lot of people have, but at the same time, I would like a job so that I could have financial independence and stability of my own, and start my adult life. So it's like, I don't know, it's like, do I have a right to be unhappy? And here's the thing. So there's kind of the ideal and the practical, because, like, in the ideal world, like, everybody should have their basic needs met and be able to actually pursue happiness. So it's like, yeah, I think I have a right to feel discontent when not all of my needs are met, even though my basic needs are met. However, we live in capitalism, as we just talked about. So, you know, that means that a lot of people don't have their basic needs met. So it's like, why should I whine when I have my basic needs met? It's like, well, because we live in a shitty society. So it's like, yeah. Yeah, I don't know.
Well, you do have a right to feel unhappy. Everybody has a right to feel unhappy, even if it's, you know, somebody else doesn't think their motivations are justified. I think everybody has a right to feel. You can't control feelings. I mean, you can control your actions, but you can't control feelings, which is what my therapist keeps telling me when I complain about how overly emotional I am. You can't control your feelings. So you have a right to feel unhappy. And yes, you do have a lot of privilege, but this kind of gets into our conversations about when you get into competitive trauma, right? When people are like, do I have a right to feel trauma? Because like my trauma isn't as bad as their trauma. Like, yes, you do. Like, even though your problems are not as bad as a lot of people's problems, you can still feel sad about them.
Yeah.
And I mean, you can feel sad about them, but it is important to keep the perspective of like your problems are not as bad as other people's and you should still be putting energy into helping other people, not just yourself. But I mean, yeah, you still have a right to feel sad about your problems, yeah, even if they are not as bad as other people's.
Yeah. I will just be, it's a paradox because it's like you are in a much better space to help other people when all of your needs are met, but nobody's mm-hmm. needs are being met because capitalism.
Because capitalism is trauma. That was Doofenshmirtz Evil Incorporated is what I just did there. I don't know where in the deep subconscious regions of my mind that came from. Doofenshmirtz Evil Incorporated. Brains are funny. All right, what else is on your list? You have... Spark.
Yeah, you've just mentioned this a couple times, and I just feel like I keep seeing stuff about it, of like, stuff that's like, oh, you know, sparks are fun, but they're not gonna, you know, get up to feed the baby at 2 a.m., and so it's just this, like, I guess, like, passion element versus, like, stability element. I don't even know how to characterize it. But, you know, I think there's sides of, like, you should just marry somebody who's, you know, like, a decent human being and dependable versus, like, you should find somebody who you really have, like, a connection with.
I mean, I think ideally you would want both.
Yeah.
I also think I believe we have more than the five describable senses. Like, you know, we've got, what is it, sight, touch, taste, feeling, and smell, right? Those are like the five that you learn about and talk about. But I do think our body has more senses than that. We just don't really know how to describe them. And I think that kind of spark and connection and pull people talk about is one of them, like kind of like that intuition sense. Because I think, you know, I think when you feel that like energy, that like extra draw to somebody, there is like something there about them that is like drawing you to them. I don't know why. And maybe it's not a healthy sense, you know, maybe you really shouldn't listen to that. I don't know. Maybe some people's sense is better than others, just like any other sense in the body. Some people have better senses of sight. Some people have better senses of smell. Some people probably have better senses of that connection spark thing that I don't have a word for it. But I do think it is like it's like a sense our body has that like pulls us towards certain people.
It's like a meta sense because yeah. There's like, you know, your five senses are like all very physical things, whereas like vibes and like intuition is like mm-hmm. you've processed all of that information. And yeah. Then what do you get out of that?
Yeah, yeah. Because I have had times where I'm just like, the vibes are off. I don't know what it is. This person hasn't done anything wrong, but the vibes are just off. And yeah, I don't. And again, I said this and I liked it and I'm going to repeat it. But with that sense, I do think some people's senses are better than others, right? Like some people have a better sense of like, yeah. You know, they're when the vibes are off, the vibes really are off, and other people are just mm-hmm. kind of paranoid. And when they think the vibes are off, it's like, no, you're just like insecure or something. But yeah, I feel like there is kind of like an intuition sense you have about people. And like, I remember when you told me the story of your fist, but I can't talk today. When you told me the story of your first kiss, I don't know if you remember this, but you said, you were lying next to her and you were like really close to each other. And you said you felt this just like energy and you were like, what is this? What is this energy that I am feeling? And like, that's kind of the sense I'm talking about, right? Like that was like your body like pulling you toward this person. And like, I don't know why, I don't know what causes it, I don't know where it comes from, but like that like energy is kind of that spark thing.
Yeah, I don't know. For me, I think as we discussed, I am persexual, which is personality sexual, which is like, I'm really only attracted to personality. For me, spark is very much like connection and like, do I enjoy being around you? Because like, as an introvert, energy is, most people drain energy from me. But if I have that connection with you, then like, I can spend time with you and like energy depletion is, you know, limited to none. And so for me, it's like finding people who, I guess it's just like feeling comfortable with them. I don't know. But yeah, I guess I don't even know what I'm saying. It's just things I've seen. But it's like, that doesn't necessarily have to be, like you said, like you can get both. Like you can find dependable people who you actually like. I think it probably just comes more from people who are probably on the opposite side of the spectrum and are either like very physically attracted or very, you know, just like impulsive, and then that stuff doesn't work out and they're like, this stuff sucks, and it's like, well, not necessarily.
Yeah, and I've also had that feeling come and go with people, right? Like I've had people who I feel the spark at first and then later I don't.
Yeah.
And similarly, I've had people who I don't feel the spark at first and then later I do, which is why I think it's such bullshit. A lot of people are like, oh, you know, within the first like 5 minutes of meeting a person, whether like you're going to vibe or not. I'm like, no, you don't. You don't have any fucking idea. Like, don't, like you'll get a feeling, but that feeling could be very wrong. You have no idea. I have met a lot of people who I thought were amazing. And then, you know, down the line in the relationship, I'm like, oh, you were actually a narcissistic sociopath. And like, similarly, I've had people in the beginning, I was like, I don't really like you. And then you get to know them. And after a long time, you're like, actually, you're pretty fucking dope. And I want to keep you forever. So like, it changes over time.
I feel like I have a pretty good vibe check. In college, two of my roommates like semi-dated these guys. And like the first time I met them, I was like, no, vibes up wrong. No, do not. And they were both dicks. So I'm just saying, I called it.
Yeah, no.
Thanks for listening.
If you enjoyed this, leave us a review.
Or share it with a friend. Or your polycule.
And stay in touch on social media @harmlessharlots.
Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Bye.